here, and you are certainly welcome. We're glad to have you, with us. We are in the last part of the book of 1 Samuel, talking about Saul and David. We have, as I said, Wednesday night, a kind of a short lesson this morning, so we'll run through again some of this review stuff we've been doing on the periods of Bible history, the narrative, and where some of this stuff is found. So it's getting repetitive, I know, but by being repetitive, I hope you're getting in your mind where these things are. So let's run through this again right quick. Whoops, turn it on, Wayne. So, first five periods that we go through, you know, we chop it up into 17 periods, boxes, if you will, to put the narrative in. So, before the flood, the scattering of the people, the patriarchs, the Exodus, they'll be very familiar to you now. And the story of the before the flood is found where? First five chapters of the book of Genesis, okay. And the flood? And the next five, in chapter 6 through 10, okay. Scattering of people? One chapter, Genesis chapter 11. And then the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is where? The rest of that book of Genesis. All right, 12 through 50. Oops, got ahead of myself. 12 through 50. So four periods in the book of Genesis. And then, again, we said the other night, or last Wednesday night, it pays to know the books of the Bible. We'll kind of go through them in order here, if you will. So Exodus is found, obviously, in which book? Book of Exodus also includes Leviticus and the first 13 chapters of the book of Numbers. So that's the first five periods. Then we go to the wandering in the wilderness, the invasion and conquest, the judges, and the United Kingdom, where we are now in our study here. So we left off with Numbers chapter 13, so we're going to pick up here in the wandering in the wilderness with Numbers chapter 14, and get Deuteronomy, and the very, very first part of the book of Joshua. And the person who's leading the invasion and conquest, we know that, went in across the Jordan and took the people into conquered land was Joshua. So we pick up the invasion and conquest in the remainder of the book of Joshua. And then again, one of the obvious ones is Judges. It's found in the book of, what's it, Tuffy? Judges, okay. But we also get Ruth in there, if it's in this time frame, and the first few chapters of 1 Samuel. Up until the time that Saul's appointed king, which begins the United Kingdom, which happens in chapter 10. So United Kingdom begins 1 Samuel chapter 10, all of 2 Samuel, and the first 11 chapters of 1 Kings. There's also a parallel to this in the Chronicles. In 1 Chronicles chapter 10 through 2 Chronicles chapter 9. In our lesson today, we get our first look at the book of Chronicles. We'll actually look at some in 1 Chronicles chapter 12 today. So that's the parallel for the United Kingdom. So look at the United Kingdom again, so that's the quarter we're in here. We got Saul, David, and Solomon, which will be the remainder of this quarter and next quarter. And Saul then is in, here we go, 1 Samuel 10 through 31, the remainder of the book of 1 Samuel, because 31 is where he gets killed. We'll get that Wednesday night. And in 1 Chronicles chapter 10, then David gets all of 2 Samuel. 1 Chronicles 11 through 29. And then Solomon picks up from there, 1 Kings, the first 11 chapters, and 2 Chronicles, the first 9 chapters. This parallel is going to make it a little more complex to look at it here. But 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel and the first part of 1 Kings is the main thread of the United Kingdom. Now, so if we got to have a short lesson this morning, let's go a little further. We haven't done this yet. So thinking as we go forward now, to the divided kingdom, which is the next period coming up. Divided kingdom, Judah alone, captivity, return from captivity. The next periods that we look at as we get on past this quarter. So, divided kingdom is going to follow right along behind where the United Kingdom picks up with 1 Kings 12 through 2 Kings 17. Also has a second thread, if you will, going through 2 Chronicles in 10 through 29. That's the divided kingdom. Judah alone picks up right behind that in 2 Kings 18 through 25. And if you're in 2 Chronicles, in 2 Chronicles 29 through 36. Look at this mainly now so we'll know where to go flip in the Bible. We want to try to find some particular story. The captivity, we have mainly two prophets that talk about the captivity, Daniel and Ezekiel. Daniel was taken into captivity and was in the king's palace. Remember that? Brought before the king, one of those men that's specially trained before the king. So Daniel was a prophet. He was with royalty. Ezekiel, also a prophet this time frame, he was out with the everyday people. He was not in the palace with royalty. So those are the two prophets that tell us about the captivity. Mainly it's Daniel and Ezekiel. Then when we start to return from captivity, we get several. Now to put them in order, it'd be Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, and then Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi would fit together. But this is kind of the order on the screen here that they come into play chronologically. That's why they're kind of mixed up looking. But Ezra, Haggai, Zechariah, Esther, Nehemiah, and Malachi are the prophets that talk about the return from captivity. All right, we'll get these again. We'll get some time later on. Just get in your mind. Now then, got the easy ones left. These ones left. Here's the silence. Life of Christ. Early church. There's the Christians. Now, nobody can miss this one. Where in the scripture we read about the years of silence? We don't. Okay, no scripture for that one. Well, it's called the years of silence. Early life of Christ, everybody knows, is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's nice and easy. Early church is Book of Acts. And the letters to the Christians, of course, are the epistles and Revelation. So if, when you get on this slide, it's kind of easy. Everybody's got it made through this one. Okay, start getting those in mind. We'll run through them again, get some time. This morning, we have lesson 11. After today, we're halfway through the quarter. And today we talk about, we'll get our first look at 1 Chronicles. We have just two slides, just a little bit on 1 Chronicles chapter 12, the first part of the chapter, and then we get 1 Samuel 28, and we'll talk about Saul going to visit the witch of Endor because he couldn't find Samuel, of course, was dead. Nobody talked to him about it. So, here we go. All right, the maps we looked at before. Keep in mind, we started out the quarter in this Benjamin Plateau area. We've been mainly down this area down here. As David would run, here's the Philistine territory over here. Gath has been into play, this Valley of Elah, where he fought the giant Goliath. Ziklag, where David's been this recently, in the Philistine territory, running from Saul. Here's Maon and Carmel, which we had last time with Abigail and Nabal. So mainly this area down here. Today we're going to get all the way up into here. Here's Endor, where Saul visits the witch of Endor. This Jezreel Valley, down through here. Mount Carmel, it's out into the Mediterranean here. So this valley down through here is a very rich, fertile valley. Mount Gilboa, where Saul's going to die on Wednesday night. So we're going way to the north. The only time we've been up here to the north so far is the very, about chapter, 11 after Saul's king, he goes up here to Jabesh Gilead, rescues those people up there. Everything else we've had has been down south. But now we're going to move back north, and that's where Saul meets his demise. Okay, two slides from 1 Chronicles chapter 12. And all this chapter does is list some of the men who came to be with David. David, of course, has been down in the territory of the Philistines, living in Ziklag, drawn away from Saul. Saul wouldn't come into the Philistine territory to fight him. David's kind of safe there. He may think he's the king of Philistines, think he's doing raid parties for him when he's really doing raid parties to build up his own future kingdom out there. So, he's in Ziklag. If you look back at 1 Samuel 5 through 7, it's a number of men come in there. And a couple of things about these men. It talks about them being very, very skilled in warfare. Now, to start out with the men that David had with him, what terms would you describe these guys who were with David to start with? They might have been men, but the ones that came very first time to be with him. The lower scum, not say type thing, those are running from various problems and troubles and I'd say running the law in some cases type thing. A bunch of scandals almost. Now he's getting, as Randall said, some warriors. Some real warriors to come fight with him. Very skilled. They came to all these different tribes. A number of them were from the tribe of Benjamin, which was Saul's tribe. So it'd be some of his kinsmen possibly coming in here. And what's said about them in this chapter about them shooting arrows and doing their slings and things. Either way, right-handed, left-handed, doesn't matter. Okay? So, ambidextrous type people. And if you go back and read these passages in Judges, and 1 Samuel, I mean, you'll read about these guys reading doing these bows left-handed and as well as right-handed. So, very proficient with the warfare. Now, they're going to be called these mighty men because they're going to be warriors out there. And they, some things about them physically were impressive. So they could run like gazelles. They crossed the Jordan River at flood stage, which would be a difficult thing to do with the water rushing by so fast. And then in one place it says that some of them, one man could knock down 100 of the opposing enemies. It said the best of them could knock down, one could take down how many? 1,000, okay? So these were really skilled warriors that's coming to be with David now. So quite a change from the people he's had before. And David's a little concerned about some of them, particularly those who came from his own tribe because, I mean, from, not, back up, I said something wrong. That David's tribe, it was Saul's tribe, Benjamin, okay? And now, some who came from Benjamin, David would be scared of. Why is he scared of the ones that came from Benjamin? Well, obviously because Saul is king, Saul is after David, these are Saul's kinsmen, and so David's a little afraid of them. So he has to do a little testing and a little concern about them. So he says, you know, if you came to be with me, that's fine. I want you to hear. But if you came to spy me out, to turn me over to Saul, then the Lord take vengeance on you. David's not going to do it, but the Lord will handle that. So he's concerned about those who came that might be spies coming to his camp from Saul. And really that's all we have, the first 18 verses of the first Chronicles 12 here. Just introducing these men that came to be with David, these battles here. So now we're going to jump, we talked about that. Now we're going to jump back to 1 Samuel chapter 28. So flip back over there, if you will, and let's talk about Saul now and what's going on with him and his life while David's down here with Achish. Saul's going to die over in chapter 31. So we're very, very near the end of Saul's death. In the first Samuel, he dies. So Saul is getting very concerned. The Philistines have been, of course, a problem for Saul all along. We've talked about that many, many times. He had to go fight the Philistines. He'd be running, chasing David, and he'd get a message that the Philistines were attacking him. He'd leave David, go back and fight the Philistines. But he had been keeping them back. Well, now it seems they're mounting a major offensive, the Philistines are. And the text there lists a couple of reasons that maybe a good time for the Philistines to do that. Who had been the controlling factor in Israel even before Saul? Samuel had. Where's Samuel now? He's dead, okay. What's Saul been occupying all his time doing? Jason David, okay. So he's kind of possibly ignored the kingdom. Samuel's not there for this cohesiveness that's been there before. So Samuel's died. Saul's eat up with chasing David. And David, where's he? He's over the Philistines, okay? Why would that be something? Well, who had been the valiant defender of Israel when the great giant Goliath was coming out after him? Well, David had. Well, now David's on the other side. So you got three things here. They would say, tell the Philistines, okay, maybe we ought to mount an attack here. Samuel's gone. Saul's occupied with trying to find David. And David's defected to the Philistines. So they mount this great campaign to fight against Israel. So they set up camp at a place called Shunem. And I think I got a map next. Yeah, I'll talk about that. Okay. Keep in mind, we've been down here in this southern part, which I said before. So now we're going to go way up north to this Jezreel Valley up here. So keep this stuff in mind up here. It's the Sea of Galilee way up here. Kind of use that for a reference point. So here's the Sea of Galilee here. Here's a Jezreel Valley. Down here, kind of arrow shaped head. Here's the shaft of the arrow back in there. Here's the Jordan River coming down over here. This place, Shunem, we're talking about, is right about down here. Okay? This is Mount Gilboa here, which we'll talk about in a minute. Get to David there. Now, I put some, maybe that's next week's slide. I've got next week's slide done too, so never mind that. All right, here's Shittim. Let's go back to that. Here's where they're going. Here is Endor here, where Saul's going to go visit the witch. Here's Jezreel, where they're going to come in and start camping. So, and Mount Gilboa's down here. This pass right down through here, back up one slide. They come up the coastal plain over here, where it's relatively flat. It's all mountainous over here. Coastal plain, here's some pass. It's called the Medigo Pass. This is the city of Medigo. Where they come in, they can march right through this pass here into this valley up here where the battle will take place. So they're going to visit Shittim, where they're going to camp first. Keep in mind Endor up here where he visits the witch. So those things have gone. As they march out with their officers of the hundreds and officers of the thousands, David's hanging back and going to march out toward the end with the king, with Achish. Achish thinks he's one of his buddies because he's been out running these raids for him, he thinks. Now, while that's going on with the Philistines coming up that coastal plain to get up there to place for battle, Saul's concerned. So Saul needs some information. Well, two places he would go normally to get information in the past. One had been from Samuel, and the second had been from the priest with the ephod, with the Urim and the Thummim. Well, he's already killed all the priests, remember that? And the one that escaped is now with David. So Saul's got no way that he can inquire of the Lord to find out what he ought to do. So he said, okay, I need a spiritualist. I need a sorcerer or a witch, somebody that can call out someone from the dead to talk to me. I need to talk to Samuel. Well, what's the problem there? He had outlawed it. He had his people clean out all the witches and sorcerers out of the land. Bad thing or good thing? Good thing, okay. It's what he should have done, okay. It's one of the good things he did. But in this case, since he's done that, he has nobody to talk to. So no Samuel, no witches, no way to inquire of the Lord, find out what he ought to do. And he's very, very concerned about this big Philistine buildup that he sees coming up here. So with no answers, he tells his servants, go find me a witch. Go find me a medium that I can get to bring up Samuel and talk to me. Well, they, of course, tell him that we can't find them because you outlawed all of them. And he says, you can't too. So they find this witch at Endor, the little city I showed you on the map there. Obviously, Saul went into her as the king, and she knew he'd outlawed him. She's not going to talk to him. So he disguises himself, takes two men with him, and he goes in before this witch. And even then, she's very leery about doing this because she knows that the king has outlawed this. So she says, who would you have me bring up? He says, Samuel. Okay. And then much to her surprise, what happens? Samuel comes up. Okay. Samuel comes up there and to the total shock of this witch, because she's been a deceiving person. She had somebody could really do that and bring up somebody to the dead. But Samuel came up, she was just totally shocked and floored. So when this happens, she puts kind of two and two together. And she figures out, who is this guy who Samuel brought up? And she turns and says, you are Saul. And he says, yeah, you're right. Do what I'm asking you to. No harm's going to come to you. Whatever. When Samuel comes up, what does Saul do? Bows down to the ground before him. Okay. So Saul still had this respect for Samuel. Now, what's the first thing Samuel said to Saul when the witch brought him up where he could communicate with him? Why are you bothering me? Okay. What are you doing messing with me? I'm not there anymore. Let me alone type thing. So he chides him for bothering him, for calling him up here. And Samuel tells him, Saul, Why are you surprised that God won't act to you? Who has told you that God was not going to act to you? I did. I told you back in what we call 1 Samuel chapter 15 that God was not going to act to you anymore. He tells him why, very specifically why. Why is he not going to talk to you? What were you told to do in 1 Samuel 15? Go out and wipe out the Amalekites. You didn't do it. You disobeyed God, and he cut you off. So, are you surprised that God won't talk to you? Why are you bothering me? Okay. So, Samuel tells him what's going to happen. There's two or three things involved. What's going to happen to the nation of Israel, the Philistines? Who's going to win the battle? Philistines are. The Philistines are going to overrun the nation. Who's going to die? Saul and his three sons. He says, tomorrow you will be like me. You'll be dead by tomorrow, this time tomorrow. Now keep in mind when he says your sons, who's that going to include? Jonathan. Okay. Jonathan was knew David was going to be king, and what did Jonathan say to David before? I'll be right there with you. You're the king. It's not going to happen that way. So Saul and his sons would join Samuel if they'd be dead. So with this information, he gets up to leave. Very, very weak. He hasn't eaten for a day and a night. So the witch says, okay, I did what you asked me to do. Now you do what I'm asking you to do. You should stay here. And after all, he's the king. You stay here and you let me get you some food. And his two servants with him persuaded him. And so he did that. I put a note, I think, of the questions there. She had a fatty calf in the house, which is a strange thing to have a calf in the house, it said. How long would it take Saul get up and sit on the edge of his bed? How would it take us, with all our modern stoves and microwaves, etc., to kill a calf, to get it cooked, to get it ready, and to make bread, and give it to Saul to eat? We don't think about that. The verse says she got up, she killed a fatty calf, and she baked some loaves of bread and gave it to Saul. Well, it'll take it a while, seems to me like, to get that calf for you to eat. But anyhow, he did. Side of the little thought there. So Saul eats and he strengthens himself and then goes back to war. So that's kind of the story in chapter 28. So the stage is now set for this big battle that's coming up. We'll look at that Wednesday night. Battle between the Philistines and Saul and his army. We know ahead of time now it's going to come out. Philistines are going to win. Saul and Jonathan and Abinadab and the other son, I've got the name, are going to be killed. That'll be Wednesday night. Okay. Thoughts on this? We'll look at these applications a little bit. Anybody? Okay. Let's talk about sorcery a minute. We don't see it a lot, I guess, in our time. See, like when I was growing up, or the younger days, you would be driving down these, you know, the two-lane highways instead of the big interstates you have now. And you see a sign out in front of a house. There'd be a big palm. Remember seeing those? Some of you people like me, a little older there. See these palms out on the side, this sign out there, it's a palm reader, advisor, whatever. And it'd be somebody in a house here that would read your palm, for a price. I don't see that as much anymore, same as we used to. But these passages here, 1 Samuel 28, 12, the chapter we're in here, she did not expect Samuel to come up. She knew she'd been deceiving the people, what she'd been doing. So let's jump across to Acts chapter 8 and look at that a minute in the New Testament. Who we read about there? We know him as Simon the sorcerer, okay? Same type thing here we got here. And in verses 9 through 13, what happens to Simon? Philip comes into town preaching. And he's converted, okay? And what did he put behind him? All this sorcery stuff, because it was wrong, okay? It was deceit. It was total deceit. So he's converted. He becomes a Christian. He puts his stuff totally behind him. But like us sometimes, we put stuff behind us. It has a way to creep back up a little bit. So there's a couple of verses later in 18 and 19. After Simon sees the apostles' ability to lay their hands on people and then receive the Holy Spirit. Ooh, what does Simon want right quick? He wants that power back. Okay. He's been able to have control of the people, to deceive the people, and now he sees this opportunity. He wants it back here. So that's when he was rebuked by Peter and actually told Peter to pray for him there after he realized what he had done. So sorcery is wrong. Okay. So how does that apply to us? Where do we see this kind of stuff in our day and time? Not any of us probably would be hopefully be involved in it. Where do we see it? Okay, one more point here, I guess. Galatians 5, 19, 20, 21, the list of the flesh, the list of the works of the flesh are listed out there. Verse 20, what's the second one in the list? A specific word. Verse 20, second word is sorcery. Okay. Listed here in Galatians 5 as a work of the flesh. So, where do we see it today? Well, horoscopes, the astrology, I don't hear much about tarot cards. Scientology is a pretty big thing these days. You hear about it particularly with the Hollywood crowds, things like that. And I would say about these horoscopes and astrology things here, people can do it and have fun with it. Okay, my horoscope today is this, this, for the funsy type thing. Putting faith in it, putting confidence in it, this is where my life is going to be run, controlled by these things like this. It's just as wrong as going to a sorcerer and trying to find an answer to that. So, somebody got comments about this? Yeah, this thing of calling Samuel up from the dead, that was a special case. I mean, and there are other cases where, right early in Samuel's life, what happened very, 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 very early in Samuel's life when he was living at the temple with Eli? Who spoke to him? Remember that? God spoke to him. You know, Samuel went to into Eli several times. So the different situation in this Old Testament times when God would speak to him in dreams, God would speak to him, have him do this. Talked to Abraham, but all through the Old Testament times we have this, but that's gone. As Randall said, that's one of the things that's ceased. We don't have that anymore. So for us to think we can get a divine revelation from some of these things here, it's just wrong. Okay. Somebody else start to say something, Doug? Okay. The list of things there. Okay, good. Revelation 21:8, Doug says, also condemns sorcery there. Go for it. Oh, no, yeah. Yeah. Yep. You just start punching your phone. You'll find this stuff there now, unfortunately. Okay. So if we don't need sorcery to find out what's right and wrong, what do we need? Okay. So the other side of this application here is, who needs the truth? Okay. Remember the passage that says something about someone rising from the dead speaking to us? We believe them. We make it more truthful if somebody rose from the dead and talked to us. What's the parable that's so famous for that? Rich man and Lazarus. Okay. Remember that story? Rich man died, Lazarus died, then the rich man died, and the rich man saw Lazarus afar off. And what did he finally tell her? Send one back from the dead, and they would believe him, you know. Who rose from the dead that people don't believe now? Jesus did, okay. So, squashing that whole thing there, no one rise from the dead. They believe. Galatians 1, 6 through 9. says that you turned away from the gospel which I preached to you. And this is important to us. Paul says, I preach the gospel to you. If an angel from heaven comes and preaches a different gospel, what? It's wrong. Okay? So not even an angel from heaven could come today to us and teach us a gospel different from what we have in the Holy Scriptures. That's a pretty strong statement. That's what Paul says. I preach to you the truth. I preach the gospel to you. If an angel from heaven comes and tells you something different than what I preach to you, that's wrong. Let him be accursed. So the verses here, Proverbs 23:23. I don't know what that says off the top of your head. We're going to do the truth. You're going to buy it. You're going to buy the truth and sell it not. Okay? Truth is what we need. I don't care whether it's something that's going to hurt me or tell me I'm wrong. I've got to look at it. I've got to understand it. I've got to say, this is right. I've got to make my life match it. This is truth. Too often we go to the scriptures, we look, say, okay, I need to find where it says I can do this, 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 and this. Instead of going over and understanding what it says and making my life match up with it. John 8, 31, 32. Anybody got that? Yeah, 32. So if you abide in my word, okay, then you're my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free or set you free. Okay. The importance of the truth as opposed to the witchcraft and sorcery things over here. Okay, comments from anyone? We'll do a little something else here. I told you it's kind of short this morning. I'll make y'all drunk, I'm sure, as I go back and forth across here 50 times. All right, Wednesday night we've got, I think it's 29, 30, and 31. Finish up 1 Samuel, and we get the battle and the death, and the events around that. So 1 Samuel 29, 30, and 31 Wednesday night. Okay, it's a little something different. We looked already at the periods of Bible history, 17 periods, and think about them again as just big boxes out here. Here's a box that's got before the flood on it. Another big box that's got, you know, the flood. Another big box that's got this on it. And on the side of that box, you've got the period written on there, and you've got the passage now where it's found. So here's the flood, Genesis 1 through 5. Here's before the flood. The flood, Genesis 6 through 10. So these boxes. What are we going to put in these boxes? Well, there are things that happen during those time frames. Let's look at some of those right quick. And we've been through this before in different forms, but a little review for us here this morning. So, what goes in our big box marked before the flood? Well, with the creation of all mankind, we have Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. We have in chapter 3, the first sin. We have in 4, Cain and Abel. Cain killing Abel. And then in chapter 5, we get these generations that go from Adam up through Noah. That's what, those are the big points that go in our box marked before the flood. Now, there's details behind that. The creation, you get all the days, what happened each day. So we start digging down deeper and deeper and deeper. And all these things here. So those are the main 5 points that go in the box marked before the flood. So now we come to the flood. And you can put a lot of different things in here. One of the first things I would usually put in there when I'm talking about this is what, get Genesis chapter 6. What's the very first thing you find out? How wicked the world is. Okay. The wickedness of the world could be up here on this. But in this period here, man, you have the flood. You have with water receding and it coming out of the ark and all these things. But there's several major points that happen over in chapter 9 of Genesis. First time they're given meat to eat for food. We have the cover of the rainbow. Law of capital punishment. Blood for blood. Things are given to them the first time there. And the curse on Cana because of what the sons did with Abraham when he was there drunk and naked. And then we get the generations again that go from Noah up through the scattering of the people. So again, the chapter of generations there. So some of the things to keep in mind that fit in this period here during this Genesis 6 through 10. And of course, the next chapter is real short. One chapter on scattering of the people. They build the Tower of Babel. God confuses their language. and we get some more generations from then on up to the beginning of the patriarch. And then the next one could be really, really long and really complicated with all the stories in there. We'll make it real simple. Anything related to Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob is in the period of the patriarchs. And all the stories that go with that in this time frame here. And then we have Joseph. We need to mention Joseph because he's the one that gets sold into Egypt. He's the one that brings his family into Egypt. We've got to be in Egypt because the next period is the Exodus out of Egypt. Okay, so Joseph, the link that gets us into Egypt to get ready for the Exodus. So we'll get to the time of the Exodus. 400 years have passed. Pharaoh doesn't know who Moses is. So Egypt's in bondage. And then Moses is born. He's raised in the palace as Pharaoh's son. The people reject him. He goes off to Midian, to the burning bush, and comes back and we lead the people out. So we have the plagues, the cross of the Red Sea, the trip down to Sinai. And I hope this is going on that you're in your mind, you're picturing a map with all this stuff's going on. So if you got a map of Egypt over here and the delta of the Nile, the Nile coming down, they cross the Red Sea, they go out, they head down toward Mount Sinai. You should see these two arms of these seas coming up there and the mountain right down in the fork of it there. They go down to Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, they get the law, the tabernacle, the priesthood, and the covenant. The four main things that happen there at Mount Sinai. And then they leave there and they go up to Kadesh, which is about on the southern tip of the land of Canaan. Send out the spies, come by, spies come back and say, we can't take the land. So therefore, they get to wander the wilderness for 4 years. And then there's just lots and lots of stories in this section here. There's 40 years that they're wandering in the wilderness. First it comes up is the question of Moses and Aaron's authority. You got Korah, Dathan, and Abiram to show that Abram was the one chosen. His rod budded, remember that. Miriam, who is their sister, Moses and Aaron's sister, dies. And then we have this sin of Moses and Aaron when they're supposed to bring water for the people. And Moses says, must we fetch water for you? But you want to step on playing with God. Strikes the rock instead of speaking to it. They go up toward the land. They go by this nation of Edom. Couldn't go through it. Their relatives, descendants of Esau. Think about that. And Aaron dies then. Remember the fiery serpent put up on the pole to rid the people, but they get bit by the snakes. In John chapter 3, the comparison looking back at Christ being mounted up there, it's like the serpent mounted in the wilderness. Those things tie in there. They go up and conquer some lands, kings up the right-hand side, up the east side of Jordan. Story of Balaam and Barak and the donkey speaking is in there. They commit fornication with Midianites, take a census again, and then because of what they did in Midianites, they're slaughtered. Moses makes all his speeches in Deuteronomy. Moses dies, buries him. And they're ready to cross over. Joshua's a new leader. And they observe the Passover for the first time. And also circumcision for the first time in a long, long time. So these events need to fit in these periods for us. That's all I'm trying to get at here. But we've got a little bit of spare time. We can go on with the rest of it here. We're about out of time. The next section is the invasion and conquest with the central and the southern and the northern campaigns. We talked about those. That. And then distributed land out to the people. And all the judges, Othniel, Hush, Shamgar, Deborah, you know those if you memorize them as a child. And then we get down to where we are now with the United Kingdom. We'll go further. We're about out of time here. So put these events in place. Get them where you know them really, really well. I was talking to somebody just a couple of days ago about our classes here for our young folks, high school down, and how we have so many teachers that can teach this stuff so well because you've been through it so many times and you know it. And you go back there and you teach these young folks, these stories and the lessons, the applications out of it. And they come out and they know a lot more we knew when we came out. That's high school seniors. So, okay, see you Wednesday night.